Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, July 25th, 2019. I'm Sam Minter and Yvonne Bo is here again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
So, as usual, we're going to pick topics, we're going to alternate, and we'll go until we feel like we're done. We'll try to make it an even number, so each of us pick the same number. It's usually been four lately, but, you know, if we do a bunch of short ones, it could be shorter. I suspect we're going to have at least one long one today. Just a guess. Just a guess. So, Yvonne, do you want to start this time?
Well, I'm going to start, but I'm not going to start with what the obvious thing would be.
Okay. You're going to start with Puerto Rico.
I'm going to start with Puerto Rico because we didn't talk about it last week.
So that's the obvious thing. I guessed it. I was right.
Okay.
No. The obvious thing would have been, of course, the Mueller testimony, which happened a few hours ago.
But look, here's the thing. The Mueller thing was anticlimactic.
Wait. We'll talk about it later. I will pick that as my first topic. Go with Puerto Rico for now.
What I was going to say is, to me, it just seemed like anticlimactic. So therefore, I wanted to talk more about Puerto Rico. So
I will add one other reason that Yvonne is picking this first. One person commented on Facebook on our post of the last episode, what the hell, you didn't talk about Puerto Rico.
I did not. Okay. and I will say that I did not last week because, there wasn't a lot of information yet. Okay. I think that it hadn't gotten attention beyond us in Puerto Rico that knew what the heck was going on. That now it's gone way beyond that. So how do I explain what the hell is happening in Puerto Rico? And here's the thing. Now, obviously, the last few days, it has gotten quite a lot of coverage. It's been in front pages all over. I don't know. Let me ask you a question. What I did talk about, I'm not sure how much I've brought up. What is it that you saw, Sam, from your perspective? I mean, I know what is going on in Puerto Rico from a very long history. So tell me what your perception is of what's going on.
So I will answer. Like I will first be honest and say I've seen some of the headlines. I've seen some of the articles. I have not spent time diving into the issue. I have not read a lot about it. I've seen some of your updates and your commentary on our Curmudgeon's Corner Slack. I've seen some of the headlines, but I have not gone deeper. So my full extent of the understanding is that there was some sort of leak of a cache of text messages by the governor that was very embarrassing, full of comments that were homophobic, misogynistic, making fun of people who were victims of the hurricane, things along those lines. And that was sort of the trigger that was on top of a long history of corruption. And so this has gotten people very upset, and there are massive protests in the streets of San Juan, Puerto Rico, that include like a huge fraction of the population of the island. Some of the pictures have been very impressive in terms of aerial views with like people as far as you can see, things along those lines. And they're demanding that the governor resign. And as of our recording, there have been multiple rumors that he's going to, but it hasn't actually happened yet. And that's pretty much everything I know.
Well, that's not bad. I mean, because that's really what's happened the last 2 weeks. Okay. I mean, that is really at the high level what really has happened. I'm actually watching, to be honest, one of the reporters that has covered it the best is not even a reporter from Puerto Rico, even though the break, for example, on those chats and the there's one thing that, aside from the embarrassing facts, they actually uncovered a series of criminal acts that were delineated in the chat. They refer to influence peddling, steering of contracts to certain people. There were actual, once you got beyond just the misogynistic or whatever, there were actual crimes that you could see that were described by the conduct of the people on the chat group. Okay. All right. So that's something that probably hasn't gotten as much attention, but it's something that really made that just not be just, like somebody asked me on Facebook, what happened outside? Oh, is it just like locker room talk? Which, you know, these people like, I mean, and I'm just like, look, man.
As if that's okay anyway, but go ahead.
As if that's okay, right? But no, I mean, there's actually a series of criminal activities that were described related to influence peddling and related to steering government contracts through certain, favored people, okay? Millions of dollars worth of contracts. And also lobbying that from people that was inside the governor's inner circle. That they were getting payments from a lot of very large companies, including, for example, I saw one that Microsoft that actually was making payments because Microsoft actually sells about $100 million worth of services to the Puerto Rico government, and a lot of things there. Okay, I'm not saying that Microsoft's practices Microsoft did was illegal, but they were paying a lobbyist there that then that person was probably doing certain things that were illegal in order to obtain what Microsoft was asking for. Okay, so that's the thing about the chat itself.
So you mentioned I got sort of the rough outline of the last 2 weeks correct. But I take it there's more depth to it.
The thing about this is that this was just the drop that just finally, look, we've had a series of just corrupt governments, one after the other. You add the fact that Puerto Rico has been in a recession for about 14 to 15 years, okay?
Which is a long time.
It's insane, okay? All right, Puerto Rico has been in a recession since 2006. 1 million people have left Puerto Rico since the year 2000, okay? Out of a total population of 4 million people, 25% decrease in population, okay, over that time period. An ongoing recession, repeated scandals in government with theft. Every damn administration the last 20 years has had a series of secretaries thrown into jail. And the week before this happened, four of the cabinet members of the current governor were indicted by the federal prosecutor in Puerto Rico for influence peddling, for taking money, for illegal acts with money. Okay. And they were arrested, and that happened to be just a week before this happened. And the hurricane, okay, look, the disastrous recovery from the hurricane, which, look, the federal government gets a lot of blame for that as well, but the local government does not escape from that either. Okay. And then inside the chat, I think that the main thing that I I actually happen to be in Puerto Rico, so I, recently, so I could tell this firsthand. The main thing that was about this that was different from others is the disdain that they had for the citizens in that chat.
Mm-hmm.
They just really did. On multiple occasions, the fucking governor's inner circle said, hey, look, we took them for a ride, including our people too. Ha! That they threw out some bullshit lie and they suckered even their own followers with it. And they were just, they were happy that they were able to do that. But I think that the number one, aside from all of those, there was a series of disrespectful comments about the people that died after the hurricane. Okay.
Okay.
I really wish that, there are statistics that mention that the estimates of the dead is in the thousands. Okay. All right. Versus the first, when Trump went to his victory lap that said that only 60 people died. Now, the truth is,
I think it was even less when he did that. It was like,
yeah, it was a very small amount. And the truth is that was right. The moment that the hurricane struck, the average construction of a house in Puerto Rico is really built to withstand a Cat 5 hurricane. Okay. right? They're all the average one. There are people that are poor that don't have those. But the average Puerto Rican lives in a house that is concrete walls with a concrete roof, and in many cases with metal windows. That freaking thing is not going to get knocked down by even a Cat 5 hurricane. Okay, it is much stronger than any of the residences that are here in Florida. Okay, or in the coast. The things that happened, you know, afterwards was flooding. Okay, all right, which the flooding exceeded the worst, but even that wasn't the problem. The problem was the power outage and the lack of any resources that went in to help people that were in medical need. Okay. And that's how people died. And so my cousin sat down with me last week and told me this story about one person, okay, that he knew that. So my cousin is a guy that had access to fuel because of his job and what he did and so forth. He was able to get fuel immediately. He bumps into this guy that knows him and says, dude, my mom is on oxygen, man. If I can, I after the hurricane, they survived, no problem. Had a generator. 1 week elapsed and they're running out of fuel. Said, dude, if I can't get fuel, oxygen is going to stop. She's going to die. Said, listen, no problem. Here, I'm going to hook you up. I'll get you a full refill. Get your fuel right now. I'm going to get it. Don't worry about it. It's done. So he did that. Okay. All right. Got the fuel. Got him. No problem. Saw him 2 weeks later. Hey, what's up? What happened? Mom died. Why? I couldn't get fuel. His mom died because we couldn't get fuel again.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the only person I heard that from last week. I had another guy that didn't know, friend of my family, told me his parents. Same fucking thing. Died in the months after the hurricane. Same fucking thing. I went and I had lunch with a guy from Puerto Rico this week. Same thing. Told me a story. Couldn't get dialysis. Died again. This whole thing, the deaths in the hurricane were not at the storm. It was the lack of response in combination by the federal government with the local government that failed to respond in the aftermath of the storm. The people weathered the storm. They were prepared. They had their food. They had their supplies. They were waiting for help, and nobody came. And then this fucking governor was making fun of the relatives of the people that died. This is why they have been protesting for 12 days nonstop to demand his resignation. Because this has been 12 days of protests nonstop every day.
Mm-hmm.
They are right now in Old San Juan. They have every street completely blocked. Okay. I have my friends that have been there. They were there in the mass protest that was the other day that had over, they had over a million people at the protest the other day. There's an island of 3 million people. There were over a million people at the protest. Okay. You had 1/3 of the population in one fucking place. Okay. At the same time, they are fed up. They are done. They are done with them continuing to just do this stupid scheme of just not trying to fix the problems of the island, just trying to get money to their friends, just trying to steer the contracts to their buddies, just making sure that the governor also found out that he had a supposed job before he was governor. He had a job. Okay, supposedly, which was with the House of Representatives, if it was the House or the Senate, okay, where he was a consultant and he got paid $200,000 a year. Okay, all right. The $200,000 a year job consisted solely of he was the son of a foreigner governor. And whenever they wanted to talk to his dad, they would call him up so he could hook him up together. That was the total thing of the job. And he got paid $200,000. A year for that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So all these revelations, it's just the whole thing, but the things with the deaths, man, with the hurricane. I mean, it's just, you know, that really, you know, that just took the whole thing. Just, this is why they are going out there every fucking day. And they are like, look, tomorrow they said that they are going to do the same million people protest the other day, because he hasn't resigned tonight. They're going to go back out and do it again. They basically are. We are not fucking stop until this guy resigns. And they actually apparently had a deal for him to resign today. One of the problems that also is with the his resignation is that the line of succession in Puerto Rico, the next person up in line is Secretary of State. Well, the Secretary of State resigned because almost everybody in his cabinet has resigned right now at this point. He has almost no staff whatsoever at this point on his cabinet. The only person that's there is the Justice Secretary, and everybody thinks that they're not very competent. And so they're worried about leaving her. So I think that they had come to some kind of agreement that they needed to name a Secretary of State so he could resign. Okay.
Okay.
So the resignation wouldn't be immediate. Okay. It would be like he would announce that he's resigning. They would go through this process, and they would get through this. The ultimatum was that if he didn't tender his resignation, they're starting the impeachment hearings tomorrow.
I was going to ask, what are the alternatives if he doesn't resign?
It's impeachment. They're going to start the hearings tomorrow. They're already set to start tomorrow.
And I gather, unlike the situation nationally with the president, these would likely succeed.
Oh, they will succeed. They already have the five charges already. The party that is his party, everybody on his party have said that he needs to go. This is being led by his own party. Okay. So, you know, they have the minority parties are completely on board. This is being led by his own party. So there is no timeline for how long the impeachment hearings have to run. They could probably, based on what I saw, because what I understood is because it's not a criminal trial where they have to get to the same standards as a criminal trial, they could go through this pretty quickly.
Yeah, it could be over in a couple hours.
It could be over really quickly. So basically, they said, look, either you fucking resign or you're going to be impeached. Okay? It's that simple. And so they had made a deal for him to resign. He had called a press conference. They had called a press in at 4 o'clock, I think, as part of that agreement. And then he didn't show. Hours elapsed. Then finally, some spokesperson said, well, he will address the country, well, the island, whatever the hell you want to call us, tonight. Okay? All right? Because we're not really a country. Okay?
Right.
All right? He was going to address the island tonight. Okay? All right. It's, what is it? It's 11:42 Atlantic Standard Time, okay, at this point, and he hasn't addressed jack shit, okay? So I guess I'm not getting my hopes up that he's going to address anybody tonight, okay, at this hour. So it's just, you know, look, man, I have been quite despondent about the fact that the people in Puerto Rico had been going through this situation in which Puerto Rico is being slowly, slowly just destroyed. I mean, and people weren't rising up and just demanding better. Okay.
Aside from this guy leaving, I mean, what would you do? How would you fix it? How would you, if you were suddenly governor of Puerto Rico, Yvonne, do you have a plan? What would you do?
Oh, actually, I do. Actually, I actually know, a couple of things that I would do as a first axe. Okay. Major problems in Puerto Rico have to do with the current budget, which is completely out of whack, and that the debt renegotiation with the fiscal control board that got named by the federal government has have basically taken the tack of just playing political games with it. Okay. Which was in the chat very clearly. They're just playing games with it and using it as a political foil instead of actually taking the issue seriously and trying to solve the problems in order to balance the budget of Puerto Rico and trying to create an economic plan for growth. Okay. they haven't taken their task seriously. So two things. I would start taking that task seriously. I would go and like try to put together a task force in order to we start working on the budget, okay, in order to revamp the budget and to make the necessary cuts that that have to be done. We already, a lot of those have been identified by a series of people. There are certain documents or recommendation that already have those. They have to pull, you know, it really needs to pull one of those up. For example, one of the things they talked about is reducing the number of counties, municipalities in Puerto Rico. There's 78 of them. It's a tiny island. Is that it's just repetitive costs. For example, you could start with that. You could start with reducing the size of certain agencies right now, which are the size of like a population's, you know, much bigger and so forth. Then the other, and then on, so you have to address that part. The other big part that has to be addressed is the mess with the electric, the company that generates the electricity in Puerto Rico, which is government owned. The process of reforming that has been almost not, but has been a crawl. It's rife with incompetence. The first thing I would do is to fire basically the entire leadership of that frickin' organization and change the way it is being run, and actually just, you know, put competent people in there and hire people that know how to run that. I mean, that would be another priority, is to tackle the electricity. The other part is the economic plan, which is like right now, there hasn't been growth in tourism. Is supposedly important in Puerto Rico. Has been no growth in that. What industries are you targeting? What are you investing? How are we doing that? There just is no economic plan. You need to put together an economic plan. So if you ask me, and I'm not running for governor, and I don't want to be named governor. My wife was like, is that the job that you want to do? I'm like, no. And look, if they came to me, which they won't, okay, all right. If they were to come to me and said, listen, can you take on the job? I would grudgingly say so, but I will say that I would like to find somebody to run for the next election so they could take this stupid job off my hands. Okay. Because I don't want to be governor. I don't want to live in Puerto Rico, and I don't want to be governor. But there are actions. The problem, like I said, is that people, they just keep playing political games. Just keep playing the same fucking games back and forth. Don't do anything. Don't fix anything. Let's just keep going with this. We muddle through and whatever, and you know, we just keep surviving and we'll be fine. And, you know, that's just gotten us to where the hell Puerto Rico is with a 13-year recession. It's just, I mean, and yeah, so that would be that part. But, you know, like I said, the people finally, they reached a breaking point. I mean, I was wondering when the hell was going to happen because it kept not happening. But they finally did, and they are just so fed up that they are just decided that they're going to keep, we're staying out there until, you know, this son of a bitch resigns or is gone one way or another. It's one way or another.
Okay. So, and I've been looking at Twitter and the other column, and apparently they're still expecting his video to be posted at any moment.
Wait, I see a video. Whoa, there is a message right now from the governor. Wait, hold on. What does he say? I don't know. He's talking out of his ass right now. I don't know. We'll see. He is apparently finally right now at fucking almost midnight doing an address, okay, of some sort on television. Okay, so we'll all right, let's see. Okay, hold on, wait. Oh my God, he's talking. I mean, he's. I want to punch him.
Here we are live streaming. Well, not really, but.
He's enumerating his accomplishments. And I'm like, who gives a shit? Fuck off. And he's kissing his ass of his wife right now, the first lady. I mean, good Lord. Yeah, here's the worst thing that he's talking to, that his wife was like, always work for that was another scandal that also was a foundation that she did that raised money from for hurricane victims, and they were stealing the money.
Oh, nice.
And they just shut down the foundation and all of a sudden like deleted all the websites and everything.
does.
Oh my God, Jesus, you're going to talk for this long? Oh God, man. He's going to talk for this long? Could you just fucking just say it? If you're resigning, just say it. Say it! Oh, fuck off. I mean, really? You're praising your hurricane response? I want to fucking punch. I want to fucking, like, strangle you. Shut up. I'm watching this actually in a Facebook live stream, and there's just, like, all it is this massive stream of just angry emojis. Just, like, flying. It's just, it's like, I've never seen so many angry emojis on a live stream ever.
Nice.
Yeah. Maybe getting to the punchline. Wait! The video paused! What the fuck? What? Yo! Oh, you have to be kidding me. Oh my God! The video just froze! Apparently, the video paused on the audio, but apparently he didn't resign.
Okay, just missing the critical moment.
It just all of a sudden, it just stopped! Well, I can hear from the reaction of the crowd. Okay, the video started again. I do believe that he resigned. I think from everybody's reaction... fuck! Okay, wait, okay. Yep.
The governor of Puerto Rico just announced that he is resigning.
Okay.
He is resigning. He just announced
it. All right. He did say it.
The message taped several hours ago, but just
aired,
and look at the reaction.
Okay. All right. So, yeah.
So, I guess that's the best way to sum up this segment.
He resigned.
There you go.
Well, there you go. The people are cheering and screaming just in just complete... he resigned as we were taping the show. So taping. You know, it's kind of funny. I should keep seeing this taping thing.
We talked about that last week. Yes.
I know, but then somebody today that was a millennial that said, "Oh, I'm gonna tape this week," and I went and I saw it. I'm like, "Look, tape again."
Yes.
So there you go.
Okay. Now that he's resigned, any last thoughts on what's going on in Puerto Rico? Is it all over?
No, it's far from over. But I do think that the important thing about this is that I think people finally in the island finally got fed up and just stop being okay with the status quo. It was just an unacceptable status quo that was in Puerto Rico, and people needed to get fed up. I mean, it just seemed insane to me that it took so long. But finally, it's amazing. I have to give credit to my people back in Puerto Rico that when exposed to that kind of language that, by the way, the president of the United States has used to describe people, they just would have none of it.
Very well.
They would have none of it. And they went out and they basically stayed out on the street for 12 fucking days. I mean, including, look, the protest the other day. I saw my friends. It was pouring. It was 90 plus degrees and it was pouring rain. They stayed out there for they stayed out for 7-8 hours of protest out there. Okay. All right. They were not going to just, you know, give up like that. So I actually said, a few of us have been saying that maybe what we need to do is need to come to Washington next.
There you go. Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things, you see these protests like this. You see them here in Puerto Rico. It's been going on in Hong Kong, and you see these massive, massive protests. And, you know, in the U.S. with, you know, all the things Donald Trump's doing, you know, the first few weeks of the administration, you had some significant protests.
Right.
You had, and there've been scattering, there've been a few big ones, but for the most part, it's died down. Everybody's sort of like, yeah, okay, well, yeah, what are we going to do, right?
Well, you know? I mean, I went to a protest in Washington last year, okay? You know, so it was,
and I've done a few local protests here of one thing or another. But, you know, it's not like, even in the early days, in the early days of the administration, there seemed like there was a big, there were lots of protests.
People are fatigued, man.
We said this at the time on the show, right? You know, this is not sustainable.
No.
This is, they'll do it for a little while and then people will get bored and walk away. And, you know, because you can't keep that stuff up for 4 years, right?
But but here's the thing, man. I mean, in Puerto Rico, I will say this, and this is the difference between what happened in the U.S. versus this. You know, nobody occupied D.C. for 12 fucking straight days. All right. I mean, this has been an occupation of the Capitol in San Juan for 12 straight days. All right. The intensity was just beyond anything I have ever seen like this. And the intensity, in a sense, that was peaceful for the most part. This was not violence, shooting, whatever. There were some incidents of some stuff or whatever, whatnot. But I mean, we had 1,200,000 people in Puerto Rico protest, and there was just not one cent of violence, nothing. Okay. I gotta say, I'm very proud of my people this week. They really did great. So yeah, maybe we could fucking just figure this out. You fucking occupy Washington. Really. Why the fuck? I mean, you know what? Maybe this is the inspiration we need to do this. I mean, you know what? This is bullshit, man. Why the hell? You know what? Right now, you know, and we'll get to that subject later, is, you know what? We need to get more drastic. Although, of course, the problem is in Puerto Rico, one thing about this unified everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is just no one I met that had an excuse for this man. And that's the one thing that really scares me about what's going on in the U.S. It's just so many people really love it.
Yeah. It's completely divisive. I mean, first of all, like if you actually had the scenario, and I think it would be almost impossible to like organize, you know, if you had like massive protests in D.C. every single day surrounding the White House, surrounding Congress, you know, impeach now, resign now, blah, 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 blah. First of all, I don't think the authorities would put up with it for all that long. You know, I'm not necessarily saying Trump would go all Tiananmen Square on it. But, you know, there's some experience from the Occupy protests a few years ago where they had some pretty good techniques of breaking those up. And I don't think that there'd be hesitation to do that once it started being disruptive. But also, even if you let it go, there are enough people who feel the other way that would start organizing counter protests and then they'd start fighting.
That's the problem. That was the problem. And that's the problem that we didn't have here. There was just, look, last week, they tried to organize a protest in favor of the governor. Nobody showed up. I mean, dude. Nope. It was comedic. I mean, they took pictures and it was like, oh yeah, they called up the group of people to support the governor, like to show up today in front of the Capitol at 5 o'clock. Really, the announcement, they had an announcement, the whole damn thing. Capitol at 5 o'clock showed up. I mean, nobody showed up. So that's the one thing that really made this be a lot easier to handle. The Hong Kong situation, that's a tricky one. I got to tell you that.
That's a whole other topic if you want to talk about that.
That's a whole other topic. I mean, I did talk to, you know, as I have people on the ground over there, and they're nervous about what's going to happen. They are nervous, which I had never heard them be nervous before.
So we've been going on long enough that if we want to talk about Hong Kong, let's make it a separate topic either today or another week. The one additional detail I'll add, and then we'll take a break. It looks like it's the resignation is effective August 2nd. So they're allowing time for whatever Secretary of State nonsense that you were talking about in terms of making sure there's a successor.
Right. They needed to name a successor. They didn't want to have like, they couldn't. No, they couldn't leave that idiot to be, you know, they couldn't leave that moron to be governor. No, we need to name somebody else, definitely.
What was wrong with the person who was supposedly the designated successor?
They were the Secretary of Justice. Let's just say that from what I heard by everybody is that she was incompetent at her job.
Okay, there you go.
By the way, update.
Yes.
The reason why the resignation of the governor was delayed, it seems, was because he was trying to get somebody named that would guarantee that he would be pardoned.
Nice.
And he couldn't get that. That's the scoop that I just found out. You won't find that in the mainline press. That he was trying to negotiate to get somebody named that would make sure that he would be pardoned.
Interesting.
How do you like that one?
Okay, let's take a break. We will be right back after this exciting message, and I kind of gave it away at the beginning. We will, of course, the next topic, my choice, will be the Mueller hearings and everything, the reactions, all that kind of stuff. So we'll be back and we'll talk about that right after this.
Right after this.
Can we say right after this a few more times?
Right after this.
Right after this. Okay, I guess that's enough.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, we are back, and yes, it's time to talk about the Mueller testimony. Now, before we really get into it, I want to say, like, we did not talk about the upcoming Mueller testimony on last week's show, so I wanted to make sure I got myself on the record. So I did a tweet storm, which I also echoed on the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, and then I made another comment that I wish I'd tweeted, but I only put on the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack. But let me go over that real quick, and then we can check me on accuracy. So here is what I tweeted. I'm just going to read the whole thing. Since it is tomorrow, and we didn't talk about it on last week's Curmudgeon's Corner podcast, let me go on the record here to say I think the Mueller testimony will be underwhelming and mostly a waste of time. The Dems made a huge mistake playing the wait for Mueller strategy the whole time the investigation was going on, and an even bigger mistake sticking with that after the report dropped. They should have been investigating aggressively and independently from the moment in January they were sworn in. And whatever Mueller did or did not include in his report should have just been one input in a much larger picture that goes beyond collusion and obstruction. By making it all about Mueller, they have abdicated their own responsibilities and vastly constrained what people perceive to be legitimate investigations and let Mueller's very limited mandate define people's views of what's going on. Huge mistakes all around. And Mueller quietly pointing people back at parts of his report will only look pitiful and sad. It will not suddenly spark some awakening in public knowledge about what was in the report all along or undo the no collusion, no obstruction mantra. I will be happily surprised if it turns out differently, but for the moment, this looks like yet another example of Dems completely mishandling the Trump investigation since they took the House. And then I'll add that the one thing the Dems have been successful at over the past few weeks is lowering expectations, which seems like a smart play, limits downside, maximizes upside. So we shall see. But still, That was the part I tweeted. The part I only put under Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, which I'd been thinking about for a few weeks, actually. But one other point, completely independent of the content of what Mueller says. He just wasn't very physically and vocally impressive at his press conference in May. For a big impact, you need someone sounding confident and strong and in charge. He just didn't. Wavering, squeaky voice. Looks like he may be bringing one of his team with him tomorrow, although the R's are protesting it. I wonder if some of the I don't want to testify stuff was related to him just not feeling up to it. Dunno.
I think that after what I've seen from the testimony, I think that that was, you were accurate on that assessment at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I look, there are certain people that are just not great at you putting them up there and talking about a subject that maybe they know perfectly, like the back of their hand.
Well, so here's a couple things on that. So, and I want to get to the details of it in a minute, but just on that one point, I've heard a lot of commentary in the last few hours because we're recording this on Wednesday evening U.S. time, so only a few hours after this testimony occurred. But I've heard a lot of people who know Mueller on the various interview shows saying, you know, look, this is not the Mueller we used to know.
Well, he's older.
He's older. And people who've reviewed lots of his testimony from before, that where he was sort of strong and confident and whatever. In this testimony, he was uncertain, wavering, looked like he didn't understand. A lot of the questions had to ask for things to be repeated a lot. And not only that, he didn't seem to have a full grasp of his own report. I tweeted, at this point, I'm not even sure Robert Mueller has read the Mueller report.
Well, let's be clear, right? I mean, you're sure he didn't write the whole damn thing himself?
Well, of course. No one expected that. But I think the expectation lots of people had, and certainly the way this was talked about for months and months and months, was that, yeah, he had a whole team working for him. But he was in charge. It was all about him. He was the one who's, it was all hanging on his reputation. He knew how to handle things. He did this.
Well,
and I think the impression you got after this was, and I've heard people on both the left and the right saying this, and you know, that he was just the figurehead to give it gravitas. But it was all the staff. It sounds, they even mentioned the guy who he brought with him. What was the name of the dude that he brought with him?
Oh, I can't remember right now. God, I barely heard his name once today.
Hold on. We'll get it.
Oh, God.
Zebley. The name is Zebley. And he was introduced as the guy who is at, basically, he was running the day-to-day operation.
Okay. Makes sense.
So he probably essentially was running the damn thing.
Right.
And I'd never even heard the man's name before 48 hours ago.
Yeah, me neither.
You know, I mean, I'd heard names of other people on Mueller's staff, but not this Zebley guy. And then it's like, oh, yeah, he was running the day-to-day operations. Really? Why haven't we heard this before? Now, there is something to be said to having sort of the senior statesmen lend their name and importance and be the ultimate one signing off and stuff like that. But I think it never was characterized this way. Like a lot of the reputation of what was going on in this report was hung on Mueller himself and his history and his reputation and all of that kind of stuff, which is a little bit different. But, you know, but having said that, I wanted to, so there's a thing there in terms of, and this was what I was picking up on from his statement in May. And I'm glad I put it into Curmudgeon's Corner Slack so I'd have some record of it. But honestly, that was the thing that I got out of that, is that back in May, I thought, he sounds old. He sounds not confident. And that's why I made that comment. And it seems like it turned out that way. And so a lot of the coverage of this since it ended has actually been focused on those optics. Let's cover all the bits of it. I do want to say one additional thing, in that I very consciously on my after work today, when I headed home, I had a couple hours between when I left work and when we were going to start this podcast. And so I divided my news consumption.
Yeah.
I listened to an hour of Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. And then I forced myself to turn to Fox, and I watched and listened to an hour of Laura Ingraham on Fox to get the here's what both sides are hearing aspect of this. And it is absolutely 100% true that you would never, ever, ever recognize that these two shows.
We're talking about the same thing?
No. There was no commonality whatsoever in the coverage between Fox and MSNBC.
But isn't that their current environment? Isn't that the reality?
No, I know that is the current environment, but you...
That is the reality. That is,
and I don't know. Maybe if I'd typically CNN has like people from both sides talking, so you get maybe CNN would have been in the middle somewhere. I don't know. But looking at the hour of MSNBC versus the hour of Fox, literally zero overlap.
it's like that you lived in two different countries, basically.
Yeah, it's like it's. Not even remotely the same thing they were talking about. And let me go what that means. Like on MSNBC, they played if you listen to, I was at work for most of this. So I listened to a lot of the early part before I got to work. And then after that, it was little bits here and there between meetings. So I didn't listen to the whole thing, but I listened to enough little chunks here. And so I got a lot of the impression of, Mueller's old. He's not handling this very well. And I heard the back and forth between the Democrats asking these sort of yes, no questions and the Republicans going on about trying to ask him questions about the origins of the investigation and various other things. But if you listen to the MSN... And so my overall impression was very muddled, to be honest. It was like, this is going nowhere, right? This is maybe the Democrats are getting some points across, but the Republicans are countering, and Bob Mueller himself looks a little old and confused. Okay, that was my overall impression. But okay, now MSNBC pulled out all of the parts that directly lined up on the Democratic side of the equation. And specifically what I mean, and actually, to be fair, I think this is being fair, but it also aligns with my own biases. They picked out like the places where the Democrats were asking factual questions about the findings of the report. So they asked him, did your report exonerate the president? No. Did you conclude that, taking them through, I'm not going to repeat all the questions, there were dozens of them, but the MSNBC highlight reel at the beginning of Rachel Maddow's show was like 5 minutes straight of direct questions to Mueller, where he gave a direct answer that sounded very, very bad for the president. Okay. And there was a lot of that. There was a lot of directly countering the spin that had been put on this by Barr and by the Trumpies for the last few months. Because one of the big complaints has been, they got out in front of it with the spin for a month before the actual report was dropped. And so they set the frame on what everything was compared against. And it was no collusion, no obstruction, no collusion, no obstruction. And so everything was compared to that. And so the questions that were highlighted on the MSNBC side were one by one refuting that and saying, yes, there was maybe it wasn't called collusion, but yes, there were a lot of places where the Trump team did things took advantage of Russian help. There are lots of places where there all of the steps involved in proving obstruction were there, and Mueller confirmed those, and blah blah blah. And so thing after thing after thing in a drumbeat, because if you take the like 5 hours of testimony or whatever it is and condense all of those parts down, you actually get a pretty good 5 minute stretch that's incredibly damning to Trump. And then meanwhile, when you watched Fox, not one of those things was even brought up for a second. Instead,
what did they cover?
Number one was what we actually started with, how Mueller looked old and confused and not in charge. They spent probably half the show on that.
Half the show.
Yeah, probably half the show, I'd say, of the hour I watched was related to that.
And that's good.
And the other half was them talking about how he completely refused to talk about the origins of the probe, and how could he not talk about the dossier, the Steele dossier, because it was such a critical part of this, and he refused to ask questions about that, and how basically how this whole thing showed that the entire investigation was a sham and a waste of time and money, and that somebody had to pay for how much wasted time there was, and how they were obstructing President Trump and keeping him from enacting his agenda by distracting with this nonsense.
Okay. So basically you're telling me that the Maddow show focused on the salient facts that came out that were pretty negative on Trump.
Yeah, and she interviewed like the Chairman Schiff about what they're going to do next and what he thought, and talked to a few experts and stuff like that. Fox, by the way, had a panel of experts too, including several lawyers. Ken Starr was there. Ken Starr.
Oh yeah, very helpful.
Yeah,
Mister, I supervised a massive rape cover up. Starr. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. At Baylor. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Baylor thing. So, but they spent most of the time really just not, they said Mueller looked old and for about half the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part, they said, this is all a waste of time. It's not like they addressed any of the factual things that actually came out. They just really just avoided all of them.
No, there was one, like former Democratic staffer, I forget exactly what his role was, that they, I guess, was their token liberal, that they asked one question about what he thought, and he started to bring up all of this stuff, and they just laughed at him and then moved on.
That's great.
But the point of this is...
But I think the whole point is that, look, that's what we said. This whole thing, look, a lot of what I think, like you said, when the report came out, right? It was weighty enough that if the Democrats are going to do something, they had the information right there.
Yes.
Mueller came out and gave a statement basically explicitly telling them to do so right there. And the Democrats still do right now have not. And so this really, if you hear from him, there was nothing else to add. Listen, you've got the fucking information there. He verified a number of the statements there, yes, and articulated them. But bottom line is that he really, I guess, felt that there is nothing really to add.
The things that he could add are the things that, because of the way he views the role and the way he views his duty, he feels like he can't. Like, what everybody wants him to say is stop the fucking doublespeak. Tell us, if you were not constrained by the OLC opinion, would you indict the president? You know, they want him to answer questions like, okay, you didn't have enough evidence to charge conspiracy, but was there evidence that something was going on that was bad? You know, and he will not answer those kinds of questions.
But what he did answer was, look at the things that he did answer. For example, he did answer that the president could be indicted at the end of this. He said that the president was not exonerated, and he said the president could be indicted after his term was over.
And also, although I will say on that, some people weren't interpreting that as very specific, given the evidence he could be indicted for this stuff when his thing was over. I listened to that part and I read it as a more theoretical, like, yeah, the presidents could be indicted after their term is over.
But he was asked repeatedly, and he did say that he was not cleared probe for that. So I'm sorry, but it's not so theoretical once you add that element.
In everything, he still, you had all of these constructions with double negatives. You had him refusing to say the clear thing, which is what Democrats would want him to do. And he said up front, he was never going to do. Is because he felt constrained by his duty to stay within certain boundaries, and he did. Now, at the very end, people speculated by the end he was more comfortable. I don't know what it was. Schiff was asking him a series of questions about Volume 1, which was the collusion part, where, you know, Schiff basically asked him, you know, is this kind of activity worrying? Is this kind of activity patriotic? Is it loyal? Is it wise? Is there a possibility of blackmail here that would be a compromise? And he was like, yes, yes, yes. He was at one point, he was asked about the contacts with WikiLeaks and said, you know, it's beyond troublesome. He was asked about, you know, some, you know, would it be unethical for a presidential candidate to accept information from a foreign government? And not only did he say yes, he said yes, and in certain circumstances, it would be a crime. You know, so he did go a little bit out on that limb at the very end, but only a little bit. And, you know, he did refer back to the report on many occasions and say, I stand by the report, I stand by the report, I stand by the report. Where the report had very, very carefully constructed language, and you and I have talked about this before, where it is designed, if you read it and parse it carefully, it doesn't say exactly what it sounds. I mean, like, one of the examples is where on a number of occasions he said, you know, we did not establish conspiracy. But then he's got another sentence earlier in the introduction saying, when we say does not establish, we don't mean there's no evidence. We mean there was not sufficient evidence for us to conclude that we could prove beyond a shadow of a doubt in court. You know, things like that. Are in the original report, and he pointed to some of that language, not the specific sentence I said, but various other examples. And so you see that, again, it comes back to his preparedness as well. Like, there are a couple cases where he said something and then somebody pointed out that the report actually said something different. And then he said, oh, well, in that case, I stand by the report, where the fact that he wasn't as familiar with the details as you might want or you might like, seemed clear, you know, and look, it was a 400 some page report. If he was mainly acting sort of as a symbolic figurehead and making large scale decisions, but leaving the details to others, this is kind of what you would expect. And again, maybe part of why he didn't want to testify.
Yeah, that's what it seems.
So, you know, moving on from the actual testimony itself to reactions beyond the MSNBC Fox News divide, there's been the main fallout now is, well, what next? What happens next? Because on the one hand, I've seen tons and tons of commentary basically saying, well, that's the last gasp for any impeachment talk. We're done now. Other folks saying, well, of course, the Democrats aren't going to let this up. They're going to do this. Pelosi, apparently, in a talk, in a private talk with Nadler was arguing again for opening impeachment hearings, and Pelosi slapped him down. But Nadler also pointed out that he had the ability to do it under his own authority. He doesn't need her. So there's clearly some sort of debate still going on there. But this brings me back to part of what I put in my predictions the day before that I read, is that the fact that they've centered this around Mueller, I think, makes everything more difficult at this point. If from the very beginning, long before the Mueller report dropped, if on the first week of January, after they'd sworn in, they'd opened up investigative hearings and said, okay, look, we've got multiple prongs. We've got, emoluments. We've got financial corruption. We do have the Russia stuff. We do have obstruction of justice, but we also have, all of this other stuff. And as you go, add on to it, the immigration stuff and the various other malfeasance of office things, and add in things the cabinet is doing, not just what Donald Trump is doing, then you'd have an overall picture of investigations, of which this Mueller part is maybe 10-15%. But you'd have all of this other stuff going on, and you could be aggressive about it because they put all the emphasis on the Mueller stuff. Now, everything they do looks like, sort of a desperate follow-up. Because, I mean, on the one hand, I see people arguing, look, if you look straight up at what was said, like the MSNBC approach, where you look at all the factual questions and Mueller confirming, yes, 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 this bad thing happened, this bad thing happened, this bad thing happened. Yes, it all adds up to an impeachable offense. And there are also one of the things that was also well established at these hearings were some of the places that Mueller did not look. It became fairly clear that he did not track down all the potential financial connections that could be used as compromising factors by the Russians, let alone the things that were just financially corrupt. He just didn't go there. And so it points to other areas of investigation. And so it actually does make sense that you want to go there. You want to now aggressively investigate all of these areas that have been pointed out as gaps. But because of the way they set this up, the Republican spin of, there they go again. They're now trying for a third time to go after Donald Trump. They failed all these other times. Now they're going to fail again. And what do you do with that? I mean, what's the, where do you go forward with it?
I don't know. I think the problem is, as you mentioned, it's July. Kind of backed into a corner right now, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
In this sense, I mean, this is the path that they chose. I think that you can still start those. I mean, you can. The whole problem that we've talked about is they haven't been aggressive enough, right?
Right.
And I think you can step it up. But I mean, what's the timeline that we're talking about here?
One thing that people have brought up is like, maybe what Pelosi wants to do here. She said again, like that, I'm not saying anything about forever, but the time is not ripe. We've got a bunch of things in court. We have to wait for the courts. And, if you're going to wait for the courts, then most likely we'll get to the end of this where the courts eventually say, yes, McGahn does have to testify. Like a year from now, right in like convention season.
I mean, well, maybe that's what. Look, here's the thing, right?
And maybe that's the plan. Like blow all this stuff up right before the 2020 election instead of a year early.
I mean, and I said this because that fucking people have very short memory spans. Okay, look at stupid the Access Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It was 30 days before the fucking election. We got to the election. Everybody forgot about that.
Yeah.
So
If we'd had one more week from before the election, they would have forgotten about Comey too, and Hillary would have won.
Yes, yes, you're totally right. Yes. So look, if there is a strategy to say we're not going to start laying out all the lumber until, since we know that the impeachment will fail,
yes,
because it's going to go to the Senate, then let's do it next year.
Right.
And it's part of a conscious strategy because we know people will forget.
But, you know, here's the thing. Like, I've heard people say that theory, but also, yeah, Pelosi's pretty convincing that she thinks it would be an outright mistake. And I also see the argument that people are making. If you actually get into next year, what's the freaking point anyway? The election's on. You only got a couple months left.
No, but it helps make your case. The election, doesn't it?
Yeah. I don't. The other part of that argument, though, is allowing the time allows plenty of time for other things to develop. And I'm not just talking about more evidence coming to light of things we've already talked about, but we're also talking about give Trump more rope to hang himself further by doing more things that are impeachable. Because, you know, we've certainly said before, like practically every week he does something impeachable.
True.
And keeping in mind that impeachable does not mean violated the terms of some statute. Impeachable is whatever the House wants it to be, but fundamentally it's about not fulfilling your duties as president, not being, and I don't mean from a capability point of view, I mean malfeasance of office, abuse of office, just general corruption, all of this kind of stuff falls into it. And, you know, maybe if we wait another 6 months, wait another 9 months, wait another year, there will be something new on the horizon that doesn't even exist today that's even more compelling.
Right.
But again, I think you have to really get somewhere, you have to make the whole picture come together.
Right, right, right.
Of not just this one thing, not just this other thing, but how does it all fit together into the general picture of the badness that is Donald Trump. And that's something the Democrats have been really, really bad at so far. Maybe they'll get better. Maybe this will all sort of magically come together next year. I don't think so. I mean, I've seen a lot of people analyze Pelosi's actions by simply saying, look, it's pure math here. Right now, there's approximately 90 to 92 people in the House that have said they're for impeachment hearings. That's not even half of the Democrats yet.
Right.
Let alone half of the Congress. So like, if you did it right now, you might not even be able to pass. I mean, we had that impeachment resolution last week, but that was sort of a weird one because it was basically just saying, let's impeach the president because he's a racist, without a lot of other stuff and without sending it to judiciary for hearings first. It was just, let's send it straight to the Senate. Forget all the stuff. And so a lot of people could be against that just for process reasons, right? That they want something more substantial. They want full investigations, et cetera, before doing anything. But right now, there's very good evidence that you couldn't actually pass this in the House because there are a lot of Democrats who'd say no. And so that would potentially be an even worse outcome for the Democrats than not doing anything at all, because, you know, then you sort of, you try and you fail, but not only fail in the Senate, you can't even do it yourself, you know, and that would look really bad for the Democrats. So I agree of not like sort of pushing it through to that kind of step until you have, at least you have, feel like the Democrats can do it. But the other part of that is one of the reasons they think they'll never get there is because there are 30 or 40 Democrats in the House who won previously red seats,
right,
in districts that were won by Trump in 2016, some by significant margins, and basically those Democrats saying, look, if I vote for impeachment against Trump or otherwise aggressively go after Trump, you know, in my district, that's not why I won. And doing that would probably kill me in the next election, and you're going to lose your majority in the House if you make me do this.
Right.
And Pelosi had made the calculation on the ACA. Like, they lost the House because they passed the ACA back in those days. And Pelosi made that calculation, and she you know, strong-armed those Democrats in marginal seats to vote for the ACA, and they lost the House, but they got Obamacare. And so there was a trade-off, whereas the calculation here is, okay, maybe Pelosi, if she wanted impeachment, and it's not at all clear that she does, I think it's actually pretty clear she doesn't, but if she wanted it, could she strong-arm the Democrats into doing it? Probably. But if they lose the House because of it, and nothing happens in the Senate, would that be worth it?
I know. That's the question. I know. And, you know, figuring out if it's worth it or not is hard, right? I mean, you've got this election coming up. You've got this process that's complicated. Making that decision whether this is going to help or hinder winning is the problem, right?
Yeah, because if you don't believe you're actually going to get the Senate to remove Donald Trump, then the calculus about this becomes, does it help or hurt in 2020?
Exactly.
You know, and that's a different calculation. Now, I know there's also the argument that whether or not it helps or hurts, there's fundamental principles of right or wrong here, and there's a duty involved, even if it costs you politically. And to some degree, I think that, but at the same time, I look at the balance. Part of the reason that I'm okay, I think we should move forward full steam ahead on impeachment, is I actually think that would help in 2020. The people who argue that it would hurt in 2020, if you truly believe that, if you truly believe it'll make the chances in 2020 worse, then I agree with their conclusions. I don't want to, I don't want to lose the presidency and the House over an effort that doesn't get you anywhere. The reason I want to do it is, A, I think there is an obligation to do it, and it's standing up for the principles of, you know, holding the executive accountable. But also, I actually think it would help. I think putting all of this through the process would actually, I just don't buy the argument that in the end that would be good for the president. You know, having a focused attention on his wrongdoing of all sorts. I think it would be a mistake if it was focused only on the Mueller report stuff, but focused attention on all of Trump's wrongdoing for months and months and months leading up to the election. I just don't buy that that would actually help Donald Trump. And that's the argument I hear a lot of people making. And I just, no. But yeah, the other part of this dynamic that we will know sooner rather than later, I think, is do you get more House Democrats signing up on the, yes, I think hearings should start line over the next week or so? Like I said, we're up to about 90 or so. I believe there are 235 Democrats right now. So I think you've got one marker at 118, which is half of the Democrats.
Okay.
Because once you have a majority of the majority in favor of this, I think the political calculus changes a little bit. And we're not there yet. Like, we're at 90, 92, something like that. So you got a ways to go to 118, right? But I think if the pro-impeachment hearing, and I want to be clear, that's different than we want to right now pass something and send it to the Senate. But the folks who are for officially starting an impeachment investigation, if it gets to 118, I think the dynamic changes a little bit, and maybe it starts to snowball a little bit. I'm not clear that they can get to enough Democrats to actually go all the way through. But I think it does change once you have a majority of the Democrats for it, because that gives cover to some of the other Democrats who are holding out. They said, you know, look, it was inevitable, so I went along with it, as opposed to, you know, you're the decider or whatever. So we'll see. I mean, it might even, I think Pelosi is famous for her vote counting. And I think part of her calculus is all about the vote counting and seeing where people are. The thing that's frustrating is her unwillingness to sort of take the lead. If anything, it's all been about slamming the brakes so far. But I frankly expect that to change. I mean, it's been clear that the leadership strategy has been to go slow. It seems almost like they're afraid, even in the things that aren't related to Mueller, it almost seems like they're afraid to investigate too much because they might uncover something that made the case for impeachment more compelling, and they don't want to go there, so they don't want to find out.
Right.
I mean, and maybe that's wrong, but it certainly feels that way. Like, how else do you explain how slow they've been? Unless, again, it's your strategy here of, like, let's delay just enough so that instead of all this stuff hitting in 2019, it hits in 2020.
Which, like I said, since the beginning, I have said that I have actually advocated to a certain extent that strategy. Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
I've been worried. This is not the first time I've said this, that I'm worried that people just forget that you put everything out there right now, and then next year is like, who cares?
Yeah. I mean, especially if you end up with the Senate acquittal, right?
Right. Which we know, I mean, you know, that's the outcome.
Right. And if the Senate acquittal happens in September or October of 2020, you have the opportunity to spin it as, look at all those goddamn Republicans. Here's all the evidence we laid out, and they're still defending him.
Right.
Whereas if this happened, you know, in November or December of this year, by the time you got there, everybody's forgotten.
Now, understand that we're speculating about whether that's the strategy they're following. Okay. We don't know that. It's not like they're laying it out for us.
I mean, I honestly, like, to me, that's sort of the best case scenario of what Pelosi's doing. But honestly, what I think Pelosi is doing is she honestly thinks she has taken the lesson of the Bill Clinton impeachment, and she's taken the lesson of how the Democrats got beaten when Ronald Reagan beat Jimmy Carter, and she's internalized sort of this, you know, you can't be too bold or you lose message, and decided that she fundamentally thinks impeachment would lead to a Donald Trump reelection and them losing the House, and therefore she actively wants to stop it, and she can't quite come out directly. She's come close to saying that, to be honest, but she can't quite go completely and say, forget all this, forget it. So she hedges her bets a little bit, but I think fundamentally she really believes that. And so therefore thinks of the impeachment scenario as a disaster scenario for the Dems. And so therefore her job is to apply the brakes. I think that's where she really is.
Look, and I've said this before, I don't know if she's wrong. I mean, I wish I knew what the right strategy to make sure that Donald Trump doesn't continue beyond 2020 is. Okay? I mean, that we could get rid of him as soon as possible, which is really the most important thing.
So, you know, based on purely, you know, polling numbers on both the presidency and impeachment, it seems like the answer to that is no impeachment and Joe Biden.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. I mean, that is really, but I don't know if.
I don't know that that's actually right.
I don't know either.
Yes, that's what polls say today, but the whole problem with this whole scenario is going through the actual exercise of doing things changes the environment.
I know.
Like, you can't just react based on what's going on today. If you actually take a leadership position and actually actively try to drive the narrative rather than react to it, you have the potential to change things. But that's what the Democrats seem scared to do.
Well, because it could backfire.
Well, it could backfire. And like we said, like that whole MSNBC Fox split, here's the problem. The Democrats can go off on all of this. They can have fucking impeachment hearings. They can.
And the Republicans are going to see it because they're watching Fox News.
Yeah. The people who are going to watch Fox are going to see the report at the end of every day of the impeachment hearings talking about how there go the crazy Democrats again. And Donald Trump came off looking great once again.
Right.
It doesn't matter what actually happened that day.
Right.
You know, and to some extent, no matter what, on MSNBC side, they're going to be like, this is so bad for the president because you got the two different universes and never the twain shall meet.
That's right.
And so it's unclear that any of this would change a goddamn thing, no matter what you do. Because everybody is so dug in to their sides of the divide.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So basically, not much happened today. I mean, in real terms, what is the net effect of what happened today?
Yeah, in real terms, here's my prediction on net effect. Polls will not move at all.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Donald Trump will stay in the same damn range he's been all along. The racist comments didn't change anything. The Mueller stuff will not change anything.
Nope.
You know, he's absolutely right. He could go and shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. It wouldn't change a damn thing.
Nope.
We would still be in exactly the same place we are.
Basically.
You know, the Epstein videos could come out that include him with young kids.
Well, maybe back to, I don't know. Well,
okay, maybe. But even then, I have my doubts.
I know. No. I agree with you. I have my doubts. But yeah. But you know. But I'm putting that one on the maybe.
But yeah.
And the P tape.
No one would care about the P tape at this point. No one would give a shit about the P tape. You know. But anyway. Yes. So I on public polling, I don't think anything's going to change. I think you might get a few more Democrats signing that thing. There's nothing to sign, but a few more Democrats coming out and saying, yes, we need to start impeachment investigations, impeachment hearings. But it's not going to be dozens. You know, it's going to be a handful. It's not going to be the dam breaking and all of a sudden the Democrats are moving forward. I think you don't get there based on anything out of Mueller. If something new comes out, maybe that continues to increase further. You got a smattering of additional people that decided they were at that point based on his racist comments. Maybe additional new things come up and get there, but you don't get there because of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yvonne, you want to do two more? Or are we done?
We may be done for today. Actually, before we're done.
Yes.
Hold on. They just posted the clip of what the hell he actually said that got cut off. The governor. Hold on. Let me see. I want to see what was the actual words. There we go.
Con desprendimiento, hoy les anuncio que estaré renunciando al puesto del gobernador efectivo el viernes 2 de agosto del 2019 a las 5 de la tarde.
All right, so I don't know. I wish I could get the president of the United States to say what he just said. And I announced my resignation effective August 2nd, 2019 at 5 o'clock. Now, if we heard those words, those would make us full of joy.
Because then we could get excited about President Pence.
I still would probably be far more comfortable with President Pence.
Okay, well, I think given the length of, I think we're done. I think we're done. We don't need another two topics this time around.
Yeah. Those are really the two topics that really consumed the week, really.
Yeah, it's a little shorter than our normal shows, but that's okay. We can do a short show occasionally.
And we also did we did it earlier than we normally did as well, which is a contributor.
Earlier in the week.
Correct. We were only less than 5 days between shows.
That's true. That's true. And of course, I still probably won't get it out till the weekend. So sorry about that, guys. But yeah, there are other things, you know, that right as we were starting here, Epstein apparently tried to commit suicide in jail. Although there are some things that Epstein may have been attacked, or maybe it was a suicide, unclear. You mentioned Hong Kong. There's been a bunch of developments with the Border Patrol and ICE detaining citizens, and they're changing the rules on quote-unquote expedited removal so they can do it anywhere in the country. Boris Johnson is now Prime Minister of the UK.
oh, boy.
You know, all kinds of, so there is news happening, but we'll leave it at this for today. So thank you everybody for joining us for another Curmudgeon's Corner. All of the usual stuff. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Curmudgeon's Corner. If you want to complain about some of the things we left out this week or request topics for next week or whatever, good place to do it on Facebook, or you can send us feedback. The email is feedback@curmudgeons-corner.com. That'll go both to Yvonne and I. Or you can contact us on Twitter. I'm at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Yvonne is at I-M-B-O-U, I-M-B-O-U. And if you really like the show, you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner, to give us a little tip here and there. Depending on how much you give us, we can mention you on the show. We can send you a postcard. Yeah, you can get a mug, all kinds of other fun stuff. And at $2 a month or more, or by giving us lots of feedback and participating with us in other ways, you can get invited to our Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, where Yvonne and I and other folks are talking throughout the week, sharing links, discussing whatever's going on that day. Lately, in addition to other stuff, there has been a significant discussion of the weather. I don't know why. This is new. We haven't usually talked about the weather, but I guess there is a heat wave on the East Coast.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a heat wave on the East Coast, and I...
Boy, it got really hot. And you guys, you know, we had... You posted that thing about how people had miserable weather days or whatever.
And Seattle was better than Miami.
And like, fuck that shit. And I'm like, I explained to Sam this week how I literally, and I'm not making this up, look, because it's not that bad for me. It was 90 something outside. It was 102 in the heat index. I was sitting outside drinking coffee. Now, I will admit that I was the only one doing that at Starbucks.
Yeah, and I'd posted a little map that said it was basically how many miserable days are there per year. And one of the factors that went into miserable was like over 95 degrees and things like that. So,
right, in the heat index. And it was 102 in the heat index, but I don't know. It didn't feel that warm to me. I can see how to a lot of other people that would have been uncomfortable.
And as I pointed out to Yvonne on the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, as we learned this last winter, Yvonne also runs around and complains and is like, oh my God, I'm dying if the temperature drops below 60.
That's pretty accurate, yes.
Anyway, that's our show. Thanks, everybody. Review us on iTunes and other places, too, all that kind of stuff. And have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.